Well, Pierre, look at Pierre bringing the color spectrum today.
Well, just something clean.
That'll do it too.
That's the standard here on the pod. If it's clean,
post trade deadline, that's
Pierre clean. Will wear it if it's clean.
When I go to the rink with the kids every night, I'm like, did I wear this last night?
Hello, folks, and welcome to Got Your Back, NHL edition. LeBron, Rashog, and Mike Johnson. Hope you're having a fantastic day. Lots of great hockey talk coming up on today's podcast. We're going to dig into the season that Connor McDavid is having. Holy smokes, is he going to get to 70? We'll ask Mystic Mike to put odds on it. Auston Matthews, what's going on? Runaway winner for the Hart last year. Really settled back in. We'll dig a little bit into Auston Matthews' game and what has happened. Talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning, John Cooper, with an aggressive week from behind the bench, benching his star players. That and Hurricanes general manager and president Don Waddell on the podcast today. And of course, Got Your Back is brought to you by Cross Country Canada Supplies and Rentals. They provide equipment and supplies to all facets of the Canadian construction industry. But what sets them apart is their get her done attitude. It's a core value of this company. I've been to the branch. I've talked to the people that work there. They really do live by that get her done formula to ensure they never let the customers down. No excuses. Cross Country Canada takes great pride in this attitude and believes that their customer success is their success. And we are very pleased to have them as title sponsors here on Got Your Back. All right, we say good morning to Mike Johnson and to Pierre LeBrun. Johnny, that is not your office. That is a hotel room. So yes. On the road with the Leafs. Where are you? Where are you heading?
I am in Jersey this morning, about to run to the airport to head to Montreal. Jersey game against Toronto last night was interesting. Good win for Toronto. But I'm almost more intrigued, Shoggy, that I'm going to see the Rangers play the Habs, because the Rangers are fascinating to me because it's not – everyone wanted Kane. Everyone's happy to have Kane. Everyone acknowledges he's great. But I just think got a lot of pieces. You're trying to figure out how they're all going to fit together. And I don't know if it's quite as easy as maybe they anticipated. So I'm curious to see the Rangers tomorrow.
Overdoing it a little bit at deadline, maybe? Well, messing with. I mean, people thought maybe the Leafs did the same thing. That's a lot of new bodies to integrate in there.
And a lot of big personality and skill that are used to playing in certain positions and certain spots in the power play and everything else. And you kind of have to play Kane and Panarin together because that's why they're there. But what does that do to the power play and the lines and everything else? Like at some point, and then you watch them play and everyone's being way too polite. Everyone's passing. Everyone's like, no, you take it. No, you take, like, some point you just got to play. So they're still working through some of that stuff, Pierre. But Gerard Gallant, like, will have some work to do with all these good players.
Yeah. And keeping them happy and finding chemistry. I mean, so many front office guys, again, this year said that the one thing about the Leafs and the Rangers in particular, those two teams that you guys just talked about, is you get about 15 to 20 games to make it work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it does, right? I mean, Colorado added three guys last year and they all integrated well. But I think of the two situations, even though the Leafs were busier, I think the only core guy really they added was Ryan O'Reilly, whereas the Rangers adding two top-end offensive players in Tarasenko and Kane and having to fit them in, as MJ just talked about, I think that's a bigger chore between now and the playoffs for me.
Yeah, and a challenge for the coaching staff. Some people would think good challenge to have, but right. When you're bringing in players of that magnitude, like, yeah, you're managing a lot, Johnny. You're managing egos, you're managing playing time, you're managing power play positions. Yes. Guys suddenly are not where they would normally be. That's
team
a
hierarchy.
Bit of a delicate balancing act.
You know,
yeah, like, team like hierarchy.
Who's the most important?
Who sits
important?
Where on the bus?
Whatever. All that stuff. Absolutely. Takes a little bit of adjustment period, but I'm sure they'll figure it out. They're all good players, but so we'll see. But the good news is they have 20 games and the playoffs, which they are going to make, which is not the case for all teams in the NHL.
All right. Listen, lots to get to today. We want to have a conversation here about Connor McDavid and the season that he's having. So let's get to the breakdown, brought to you by our good friends at Kuma Outdoor Gear. Thrilled to have Kuma on board as sponsors here on the podcast. They've got a wide range of gear to fit all your outdoor needs. Super high quality camping chairs that are so comfortable and luxurious. And by the way, did you know that they come heated? They've got tents, sleeping bags, travel games, pet products, drinkware, everything that you need. There's no reason to be any less comfortable outside than you are in your living room. Go to Kuma Outdoor KumaOutdoorGear.com to find a retailer near you and check out all they have to offer. Kuma Outdoor Gear, experience luxury outdoors. Still going strong with the Kuma drinkware. I go through coffee mugs like crazy. I always have a different one. This one has not left my side for, well, since I got it like a week ago, fellas. The value of a good mug.
I've never had a cup of coffee in my life. Never.
What?
True. Like I'm not. That's not, hang, not hang for on effect. A second. Not for effect. Not to be like not. There's no moral obligation or objection in my life. I've never had a cup of coffee.
What?
I actually have a few buddies that are the same. Now, one guy drinks Diet Coke in the morning, so I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good replacement. Yeah. But
that guy.
That's an issue too.
Chirping needed for that fella. Yeah, that's an issue.
That's a red card.
Like Johnny
early.
Just never. Like, we're never even curious or just tasted it and didn't like it or just don't need the energy or like,
yeah, well, I need the energy. I just sleep instead. But I think for me, two things, Shoggy, I would have taken it if I could have had a cup of coffee and felt more energized and like played better. Like a lot of guys have coffee on the way to a game. I would have taken it. Yeah. I don't care. Like, I want to play better. But like Coca-Cola, Red Bull, coffee, tea, they don't affect me with energy for whatever reason. So that part was gone. And I think the other time, like when kids start to drink coffee is when they study, like they kind of use it for school, which is not a good idea. Kids sleep, drink water, then study. But I think a lot of people use it kind of in university, kind of study, cramming, whatever.
Listen to this
and
guy.
I never did that, coffee or cramming. I never did either one of those things. So I never got
now
into
let
it.
Me ask you this. Have you ever had a couple beers before a game or?
I have had a beer before a game. Yeah. The one, really? You've heard my story in Detroit where I.
An NHL game.
Real quick. Okay. So I was coming back of injury, was not supposed to play. We're in Detroit. Got
you did tell me
in the morning
yeah.
and like, yeah. you know, totally like bagged, like, but then we're staying at the hotel downtown. My teammate and my roommate was sleeping. So I'm like, you know what? I'll stay out of the room. So we had good sleep before the game. So I'm wandering around. I go to the casino for like an hour and a half. Then there was a lounge next to the hotel that I was like killing my last hour with. Cause I'd finished at the casino. And you kind of have one of those establishments where you're supposed to have a drink to be inside it, if you know the kind of place I'm talking about.
Right.
And so I went and ordered a beer to like kill the hour. And I sat there and sipped on it. I didn't care. I wasn't playing. And then I went into the lobby, bus left like 7 o'clock. And I got a call from Rich Nairn and the Coyotes like, hey, Johnny, can you play tonight? I'm like, what? Warm-ups at 7:30. It's 7:00. Wow. He's like, yeah, we just traded. Who did we trade? We traded Brian Savage for Sergei Berezin or vice versa. He's like, so we need a winger. Can you do it? I'm like, okay. Jumped in a cab. I'd had a beer. I'd gambled all afternoon. No nap, been skated heavily and went out and played the Red Wings back in like 03. Like the worst possible team to play against. Anyways, I played awesome. I picked up an assist, played 17 minutes. It was fantastic. I went on the ice though. First faceoff and Brendan Shanahan's there for Detroit. And he looks at me because he was talking to our coach, Pat Conacher, while I was getting skated in the morning. And he's like, what the hell are you doing out here? You got crushed this morning. I'm like, you have no idea what my day was like. So please go easy on me. So yes, I have had a beer before an NHL game, unintentionally, of course.
I love it.
It's a good story. But I mean, playing a game on one beer, like, I don't know. I want to hear the story about playing absolutely hung over to the point where you can barely function. Like how hung over have you played games? That's where the juice is in those stories.
We played Y2K in Buffalo. And Buffalo was so determined to win that game. They had a curfew and brought their players to a hotel. We in Toronto did not have a curfew. And we spent the New Year's Eve in Toronto and then bust down in the morning. And I was the responsible one. I think I was the first of the teammates that I went home with at 3:45 a.m.
Oh.
And I was the first guy to leave. The first.
Oh.
And I had my buddies tell me how I had a couple of teammates drop them off at like 8 a.m. Our bus was at 9. The bus was not fully attended. Like we had multiple people miss that bus. Catch us on the QEW on the way down to Buffalo in a cab to jump on the bus. We lost, I think, 8-1. It could have been 15-0. Oh, that game, the blood alcohol level would not have been legal to drive it probably for some of the players. So that was that would be more like a severely hungover, not feeling very good game.
Yeah.
And that's the era where, you know, honestly, in today's NHL player, you're just not hearing that as much, right?
No.
Just a completely different lifestyle with today's young player. And which is better probably now. A good thing.
Now, Pierre, Pierre, you've never had to report green at all, hey? Like, that's you've never had to go to the rink the next morning feeling a little off? That's not...
I've been a pretty good bounce-back guy. But there was a morning skate where Scott Burnside and I, years ago, after about a half hour at a morning skate at a playoff game, we said, you know what? We're going to take the option on the optional here and go back and rest. I showed up.
I will say, and we're not going to tell tales too far out of school, Pierre. You're known as a real solid bounce back guy. A lot of mornings where you come walking in fully showered, nice fresh set of clothes with a coffee in your hand, smiling, and we're all looking at each other going, oh, he feels a lot better than I do, clearly. You're a good bounce back guy.
DNA, man. I don't know.
That's a big compliment. That's a big compliment to take.
Yeah, shows up the next day. Okay, guys, let's talk about Connor McDavid. So we ran a feature on SportsCenter yesterday. Johnny, you helped me out with it. We dug in deep into Connor McDavid and this goal-scoring season that he is having. It's really pretty unbelievable the pace that he's setting here. He's at 54. He needs 16 in his final 17 games to get to 70. But, Mike, as you evaluate his game and we look at the evolution of Connor McDavid, which is kind of what that piece we put together was about, the evolution of him, the upgrades that he's added to his game to get to this point, what stands out most to you about this version of Connor McDavid that is burying all of these goals?
I think primarily his shot is much better than it used to be. Like, he's added velocity, accuracy, time of release, and expanded his range. And I think that's the most important piece for Connor McDavid, because it's kind of a simple dynamic to understand. I can't skate as fast as Connor McDavid. So what do I do to defend him? I just back up. I just keep backing up. Because if I give him room behind me, he'll get behind me. So I don't give him that room. I give him room in front of me, inside the tops of the circles. And if he can't score from there, then it's good. But what he's done is shown that he can score from there. So now what do? Now I got to challenge him earlier, which leaves room behind me. Now we can, you know what? You want to gap up? I'm right around you. You want to sag off? I'll shoot and score. And it's like it's a simple dynamic, but one he didn't have earlier. So that, to me, is the biggest kind of skill that he's added, and maybe the biggest sort of transition he's made mentally. And he will kind of acknowledge this, Shaggy, you know him so well. Like, he always talks about, I just make the right play. I don't think about scoring. I don't think about shooting. I think he thinks about scoring more now. Like, I think he's kind of shifted his mindset to not always defer as often. He's a pass-first guy, and I think it's born out of him being so great when he's younger. He did not want to appear selfish, so he passed all the time because he could score whenever he wanted. I think he sort of tweaked his mindset, Pierre, to maybe just look to score more, coupled with his skills, and now you're getting this incredible, maybe historic-type season.
Yeah, and he's a very unselfish player, as Ryan knows, and I think that part of the, you know, I don't think he started the year by saying, I want to score all these goals. I think that he feels that this is another way for this team to win games, and they need to win games. They're still not assured of anything, right? Mm-hmm. So the irony is this part of his game is helping this team in critical moments, which is even more impressive to me. Sometimes a guy will pad his stats in the month of March when his team is 10 points up on a playoff spot or whatever. No, these are games that Edmonton needs, and these are moments where he's delivering exactly what the team needs. And, you know, I was just thinking while you guys were talking about him, and I want to preface this by pointing out that I haven't always made the greatest award choices in my career as a PHWA voter, so I'm not picking on anyone, but it'll be fascinating to me.
There'll be a few
to see who the guy is that doesn't put first on his Hart Trophy ballot, like, and because you can't even really bring up
province.
Because you can't really bring up the old. Because sometimes you could, as we know, we've beaten this one to death. You know, Draisaitl, McDavid, it's MB. No, even that, there's been a lapping even there, right? So he literally stands alone on any kind of argument that you can make this year.
Johnny, want to back up your point with some statistics. These courtesy our friends at SportLogic who helped us out with the piece. So in 21-22... 37 two-on-ones Connor McDavid had, shot on 13.5% of them. This season...
That's like 5 of 37 he shot on.
Yeah, 5 of... Yeah. This season...
How's my math, Shaggy?
Really, that was really impressive, man. Even wow. Okay, well, I'll give it to you.
I disagree. Bowling Green.
Yeah, so he's got 29 two-on-ones so far this year. What do you think his percentage of shots is this year on his two-on-ones?
I bet it's 32.
37.9%. So he's shooting on almost triple the number of two-on-ones than he was before.
There you go.
And I asked him about this, and he just he wants to make the best play, but he wants to give what they're or to take what they're giving. What I've seen, you guys, and you know, I've been covering since he came into the league. It's not very often that you get an amazing playmaker who suddenly has the ability, like he developed a shooter's instinct. Because when you watch him play now, he really plays the game with a different instinct than he used to. And Johnny, I just think that's really impressive to develop an instinct that wasn't naturally there to begin with. I think great players want to make themselves better. We've watched Connor McDavid develop this from working on his one-timers to trying different types of shots. The other thing he's doing, he's taking the puck to the middle of the ice and he's shooting through traffic more than he ever has before. You know, so rather than pushing in behind, he's cutting in the middle and shooting through, Johnny.
That's the Auston Matthews effect. You talk to any great player, all the top players, like whether he's a younger guy like McDavid or maybe he's a mid-range guy, maybe he's Jason Robertson, it's Patrick Kane. All those guys go like, no, Austin's shot. And they study it. And I know he's gone down to Arizona and worked with Austin a little bit. And they've kind of like, I think like that's also that idea of like different release points through traffic is some of Auston Matthews' success. Other top players picking up on it and saying, you know what, how can I integrate that? Now, I could try to integrate that, but I wouldn't be able to. And that's what separates Connor is that he can. And again, never going to compare myself to Connor McDavid. I was a guy who had a pass first mentality. I've had coaches since I was 10 saying, Mike, you should shoot more. All the way till the last year of my career, shoot more. And I never could quite get to that point. So that's not as easy as people maybe think it is. Oh, just shoot more. It makes sense. Yeah, it does make sense, but when it's so ingrained in you to maybe not or look for something else, not so easy.
And this doesn't take away anything from this unbelievable historical season, but we should point out just for context that this is, you know, this will end up being one of the highest scoring years for the league as a whole. Yeah. I think in what, 20-something years or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Probably close to 92, 93, those glory years where everyone was scoring 50.
Which is great.
No, it is. It's been entertaining. Interesting that the next, you know, real good young player coming along here in Connor Bedard, his game, Johnny, is rooted in, you know, pulling that puck in and shooting through traffic. Like that's the greatness in his game at this point is his ability to do that skill that McDavid has developed in year 8 here.
And make no mistake, like he's gifted, it's natural, but it's work. Like you don't get to be a better shooter because you want to be. You get to be a better shooter because you work at being a better shooter. So full credit where it's due. He's already the best and he's still adding, which is a frightening proposition. And one little snippet more on McDavid. And the power play for Edmonton can't go like without, you know, a reference to how successful that is and how unique it is because they don't have a setup. They don't have Connor on one side, Leon on the other. Like, they flow with Nugent Hopkins. Yeah. The three of them really kind of make it happen through the middle. And it's very, very unique. I love the patterns, how they set it up, but it's not static, which is unusual even for top power play. So that's part of the
success. I love seeing when power play units have this kind of sustained success. Remember in Joe Thornton's heyday in San Jose, there was a Pavelski, Thornton, Burns power play that was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, they would just go throughout the year and they had those different options, and that's what this reminds me of right now, and even on another level in terms of the speed of it too. You know, so many power plays are stagnant and, you know, people are looking for lanes and this thing just flies. It's unreal. Yeah.
Johnny, you're the numbers guy. Percentage chance that McDavid gets 16 in his final 17 and gets to 70. On pace for 68 right now.
So I'm going to, it's probably 37%, a lot like a shooting rate on a 2-on-1.
37%?
It's not likely because nobody scores a goal a game. He's already gone through a really, really, or he's currently in a super
12 in his
run.
Last 8 games.
So like he'll probably cool off and go like, you know, 1-4 or something. And that'll make it that much harder to get to that number. I wonder, like, you know, 70 is a big number. Does anyone care if he gets 67? Because 65 was Ovi's number. That's the last big one of this generation. I don't think it's 70 or it doesn't really matter. So I don't know if he chases it, but probably, somewhere in the 30s. There's a chance, but not a great one.
P?
The thing that I wonder is what if the Oilers clinch a playoff spot with 3 games to go?
Oh, yeah. Dreisaitl is going to try and get him. Leon Dreisaitl is going to be doing everything in his power to get McDavid to 70. It'll be ridiculous. We'll be shaking our heads laughing watching them try and do it.
This is a real conversation, especially the last game of the year. If it's truly meaningless for the Edmonton Oilers,
don't play them.
I wouldn't play him. I'm serious. I'm sorry.
No.
Pierre, out of respect.
You always want to go deep here.
Hang on. Connor's played every game this year, hasn't he, Ryan?
Yeah.
And he hasn't always had that. So if I'm Edmonton, I'm like, I'm respecting your commitment to play. You're playing 3 minutes tonight. You're getting two shifts, and then you're going to watch.
I don't know.
Listen, I know. It's not a hockey thing, but I would want to do it too.
Preservation, but you got to – I mean, that's tough to do. Don't you just say, listen, you know the situation. What do you want to do? Now, if he's sitting on 69
or 68, you're like, we probably got to let him go for it.
Yeah.
Put him out for power plays.
Yeah. Well, the Boston Bruins are going to be the most – the Bruins are going to be the most fascinating team in the league in the next 5 weeks with that debate, because they literally have – nothing to play for other than history right now in the rest of the regular season. And if you guys remember when Detroit won 62 games, I forget the year that was, but when they won 62 games, I think Scotty Bowman did rest Lidstrom and some of his top guys. And then they end up getting upset. Was it in the second round? And there was all this sort of armchair quarterbacking. Well, maybe there should have been resting top players in March. And because he rested a lot of players because, of course, they had such a lead in the standings that they wanted to sort of, especially a guy like Lidstrom, right? Such a you know, let's bring his energy levels back, get him ready for the playoffs. I don't know. It's a good debate. And you know, a team like Boston that has some aging core guys like Bergeron and Krejci, you know, they've already had some big injuries, obviously, to Fleury and Hall. But if there's a week left on the season and they're up by 20 points, and I don't know, like what's the game plan there if you're Jim Montgomery? I mean, I can't wait to have this conversation because I don't know that there's an obvious answer.
But more recently, remember Braden Holtby chasing the win record, and he played a ton down the stretch a few years ago, and he got tired, and he wasn't great in the playoffs. So, you know, there's no – you right. always pick a case where it worked well or it didn't, but we'll see. But I don't know. Yeah, and if he's at 68, 69, Shoggy, he's playing every game. He's going for it.
Yeah. But as soon as he gets 70, you shut him down.
Oh, you sit him down.
Yeah.
And at that point, for the night. You know, honestly, Ryan, I think he has enough respect around the league. Unless it's a team like, if it's LA, I don't know what their last game is, if it's LA or Seattle, but if it's like a team out of the playoffs, there's enough respect for him that guys would probably not hit him. He might get hit with a puck, but not with a body to the same degree, I would imagine.
Not running him. No. Yeah. Unless he's out there, you know, going superstar mode.
He would just trying, but he does that anyways.
Yeah. It'll be really fun. Be a really interesting dynamic to watch. Okay. So the other side of this conversation, a fantastic season from McDavid, is an analysis on the season that Austin Matthews is having, guys. He's 0.51 goals per game this year. He was 0.82 last year. 19th in the league in goals per game so far this season. He was the runaway, you know, winner of the Hart and the Lindsay. And I don't know, Johnny, like, how would you summarize what we've seen from Austin Matthews? It's kind of unfathomable at the start of the year that he would go from all that success and separating himself from so many of his peers last year to this year falling back to where he's fallen back to. What do you think's happened?
Surprisingly excellent. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you gotta remember. So he's doing defensively very good. He's on our, you know, if he would have played every game, it's like a 90 point season, but given where he's come from in a 42 goal pace, but given where he was last year, you can't say that that's not a step back and disappointing. I think the first thing to me that says he's not been healthy, and I watch him closely. I call the Leaf games. He hasn't moved as well this year as he has last year, and he's battling and he's playing hard and all the rest of it. But I think that's part of it. I think teams are learning how to kind of take some of his options away or take the Leafs' options to get him the puck away and make them go in different directions, which they do well. That's why Nylander's having a great year and Marner's having a great year and Tavares having a good year. But it is surprising. Now, if this is his worst year, her down year is 43 goals and 85 points. Like that's not the best player in the world, but it's really pretty good. But I think I chalk most of it up to health. A little bit of opposition adjustment and some bad luck, but mostly health, Pierre. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, I think you deal a lot. Remember, they shut him down for a couple of games for some maintenance earlier this year, so clearly not 100%. You know, the other thing is, and this is not a criticism of William Nylander, who's having an outstanding year, but, you know, Matthews has not played with Marner every single game this year. There's been a bit of both, some nights with Marner, some nights with Nylander. I think it's been smart of Sheldon Keefe to understand that he has different tools in his toolbox come playoff time that way. But I think clearly the number one tandem, as MJ knows, is Marner and Matthews. They love playing together and not having the full chunk of the season with Marner, I think maybe contributes a bit to to the down goal production.
Now, I wonder if there's another component, Ryan. You've talked to Draisaitl and McDavid about this, and I think the Leaf guys are kind of going through this as well, and that like they've sort of achieved a lot of what you can achieve in the regular season.
Right.
And they're done that comment from Draisaitl.
Yeah, like, you know, if they go get, if he gets 55 goals and 120 points, like no one's going to even care, which is a really weird place to be for an athlete. But I think that's where they are. It only matters. And I kind of believe that with these Leaf players, like they know it's like, it does not matter what happens in the regular season. And if he plays well and they win in the playoffs, then no one will care that he scored 42 goals and not 52.
Yeah,
and that's really genuine. Like, you know, MJ knows playing with these guys, but you know, I remember sitting down with Alex Ovechkin. It was months before they ended up finally winning. And we sat down, we talked about another, I don't know if he'd won the Hart the year before or whatever. And he literally rolled his eyes about all the awards he had won. And he stopped me mid-question. I'll never forget this. I wrote the piece for ESPN.com and he said, "I just want to win." And the look on his face when he said that, this isn't a guy that was doing it for the headline or for the, he just was tired of, let's be honest, seeing Sid do what he was doing and team wise and all the hardware and silverware and he wanted in on it. And I remember thinking, holy cow, man, like this guy would give back all of his individual awards if he could win the Stanley Cup.
Isn't it interesting to see the Edmonton Oilers with McDavid and Draisaitl, stars of that caliber, peaking in a window here. At the same time, the Toronto Maple Leafs load up, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner playing the way he is, Nylander peaking, loading up here. These two Canadian franchises peaking inside their window at the same time with the same goal.
Man. If it weren't for the Bruins, like honestly, if it were not for the Bruins, I would say an Edmonton-Toronto final is about as likely as, not likely to happen, but as likely as any two teams you could pick.
Yeah, I mean, Colorado might have a bit of an argument to make with you there, but
yeah, like obviously, but like I like as likely, you know, it's and we and like listen, Canada is starving for some. I think somebody, please, it's been 30 years.
Yeah, somebody get her done.
Would be amazing, but to MJ's point, the path in the East. I mean, oh my goodness,
which is why did this thing, top five teams to win the cup on trade deadline day, and Edmonton was on my list, not because I think necessarily they're a top five team in the league. But because of the path, I think, their path through the Pacific to the conference final is not as tough as, you know, Toronto's through the Metro or the Atlantic.
And but again, imagine if the Leafs beat Tampa and then upset the Bruins. It's all legitimate possibilities, both of them. But then they get the Hurricanes, Rangers, or Devils in the conference final. Three other 100 point seats.
Yes.
I mean, it's just
a grizzly bear, grizzly bear of a division to come out of, or a conference to come out of. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning, Pierre. You know John Cooper well. We've covered him through many series. Things get a little tense there with the Lightning. They rattle off a bunch of losses. And if people didn't see it, Coop flat out benched Stamkos, Kucherov, Point for an entire period against the Buffalo Sabres, sending a strong message. And after the game, here's a little bit of what Cooper had to say as far as his reasoning.
Team's been unbelievable for a decade, and you know, you take the three finals. Well, there's a reason a lot of that's happened. We have a set of standards here that everybody adheres to, and it's not pick and choose. It's everybody. And so,
He basically said, listen, we wanted to give ourselves the best chance to win, and those guys were not the best chance that we had to win. So then the following night, this is back-to-backs. Back-to-backs, they roll into Carolina, and they get absolutely stomped by the Hurricanes. 6-0. Afterwards, Steve Stamkos has this to say.
People were probably hoping for a better reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're delusional to think, not you, but in general, to think that something like that is just going to click. I mean, it's got to be a team effort. It's got to be our collective group. I mean, if that was the answer every time, you know, when you're in a skid, I think every team would do that, right? I mean, it's just, it's not something that, you know, something like that happens. It's not just going to flip the switch and we're going to go on a 10-game winning streak. We've been in a skid for a while now.
This is rare for Cooper to do, Pierre. What do you make of that whole situation? By the way, they did bounce back and win a game last night.
They did. It's rare for Cooper to do. It's rare for any coach to do in 2023. You don't often bench your top players for an entire period in today's game. But I took that as also a message to the entire bench, not just his three top players. In other words, this is how angry I am, and you better believe I'm willing to do this with these guys, that everyone's on notice here. There's a lot of frustration there, I think, last week. What I would tell you is if I was another Eastern Conference team, I'd actually be worried right now, not relieved to see the Lightning struggling, because they're going to come out of it. And this smells like one of those things that if the Lightning go on another deep playoff run, that they look back and we see these columns in the playoffs saying, remember that day where those three guys got benched, and team meetings and a lot of honesty in those behind the door conversations between Cooper and his leaders. Watch out. I mean, if anyone's hoping that we're done with the Lightning and this is a great sign that they look like they're falling apart, wake up. This team is going to get off the mat. I'm telling you right now.
Johnny? Well,
it smells like something, that's for sure. A whole lot of, like, honestly. So, like, yes, no one's not saying they're good. They are in my top five teams in the league. I'm okay saying they're not as good as they were. I'm okay in saying that. And, like, their depth on front, their depth in the back end is not as good as it was. Some of their players, their best ones, are also getting a little bit older. Injuries and the wear and tear of these 3 years. Both things can be true. I'm terrified of them. I'm terrified of Vasilevsky, their history, what they know. But I'm also a realist. Like, they're not quite as good. And, like, no, I'm not quite as fearful of Tampa. I'm fearful, but not quite as. Like, the amount of respect that they deserve and have earned is warranted. But, like, if any other team were going through this that hasn't won, they'd be like, oh my God, falling apart, poised for a first round loss. What a mess. They're, because it's them, it's like, oh yeah. Even worse that they've lost seven in a row. I'm like, damn, it's not worse. It's like, it's not a bad thing to play a team that's struggling. So I'm not saying that they're not going to do well in the playoffs. They may win. They may win multiple rounds. But I am saying it's not a sign of some sort of beware of the wounded bear because here they come. I think that's a bit of a stretch to me. But
by the way, their window better have more than 1 year left in it, because they're not even going to show up for the NHL draft for the next 5 years.
Yeah, all those picks. Murray's going to have his work cut out for him. Johnny, what did you think of the benching?
I'm with Pierre. Like, I actually did a game once where he benched Kucherov the whole game, the whole third period. He just sat there because he wasn't happy. Tells me two things. One, Coop is so sure of his position in that organization and with his team that he can do that. Because a lot of coaches wouldn't do that, worried about management and maybe more importantly, like some sort of rebellion amongst the players where they kind of tune him out completely. He's not. That's the strength of John Cooper right there being shown by willingness to do that. Also, the rest of the team, while also unnoticed, will appreciate the universal accountability he's applying. Now, we know Kucherov doesn't have the same rules as Ross Colton, like, you know, as far as what they can do on the ice. But at some point when Kucherov plays terribly, Ross Colton be like, oh, yeah, so he got sat too. It's not just me, and that does resonate with the whole group and might be galvanizing as well. But, you know.
He didn't seem too happy. I mean, they scored a goal earlier in the game. And I did – I mean, I watched the highlights.
The bigger surprise, though, Shaggy, is that they were so terrible against Carolina. Like
that's the thing.
The surprise wasn't the benching. Like that. The lack of response was the more surprising thing.
Yeah.
But to MJ's point, just to wrap this up, John Cooper, highest paid coach in the NHL. I mean, you can say what you want, but
it's got some juice.
Yeah.
Yep. Signal sense. We'll see how the Tampa Bay Lightning respond if they find their game as they hurtle towards the postseason. Calgary quickly. I don't know. Clawing their way back in the fight here, Johnny. Is there anything there? Markstrom's kind of finding his game a little bit here. They get a little bit of the hockey gods smiling on him last night, having to come back. So I think a couple of them were in the shower by the time that offside review was finished. I don't know. What do you think the chances are here, man? Give Flames fans either some hope or put them out of their misery.
Well, I mean, I think the hope is that the teams they're chasing haven't been very good. Like, I think Winnipeg's let them back in more than Calgary is, like, surged and playing well and is going to show who they truly are all after a year of sort of struggling with consistency. It still is not coming easy for Calgary. I know they scored 5 against Dallas a couple nights ago, whatever it is, but they're going to need help. You know, the games played, the points percentages, they're going to need Winnipeg to stumble close to 500. And if they do, then they can. It's still less than a 50% chance. I'd say it's more like, sort of like 35-40% chance that they might make the playoffs, but it's more dependent on the teams around them struggling than them playing exceptionally well. It's still not quite right.
And interestingly, Nashville, big sellers at the deadline, actually have a better points percentage. I think they have four games in hand on Kyrie. But I don't know what you two think of this, but I have this theory about having games in hand and when you get too late into the season. Like at some point in mid to late March, you know, looking at points percentage instead of points and so on, I don't know that you want to be the teams with games in hand at some point. Like, so the Predators, I looked this up before we got on this podcast, four games in hand on Calgary, which you would think is ideal, but they play their final 21 games in 37 days. And in fact, play their final eight games in April in 14 days. And I think one of the things that you battle is that, yeah, you got points on the board that you can chase, but you're also damn tired as a team. And so I don't get as caught up, I think, as a lot of people in the games in hand thing, because I'd rather be the team that's played the most games as long as you like where you are in the standings, because I think rest at this time of year is a pretty big deal.
You do feel like destiny's in your own hand though, Johnny, when you got those games in hand.
Yeah, as a player, you're like knowing, well, yeah, we're six back. We don't play at a 750 clip. We have four games in hand, but I like knowing that if we run the table, we end up ahead, even though it's very unlikely to happen, as Pierre accurately points out. But as an athlete, you're like, I want the challenge, the shot of running the table.
Yeah.
The reverse of that argument is the Islanders forever now have had more games played for whatever reason as everyone in that chase in the East.
Yeah.
But when they do play, they win and they're still there. Like, in other words, it felt at first like, oh boy, they're going to.
Well, got to wait for those teams percentage. to finish those games in hand and see where they end up. Although I think the Islanders are going to make it. I'm just saying. We'll see.
That was a breakdown brought to you by Kuma Outdoor Gear. Great job today, guys. Johnny, in your playing career, you ever get speared in the boys? You ever get speared in the pills there? You ever take a Tony D'Angelo between the old?
I never had, not like that. I mean, we
you
have
ever the do old... that to anybody? Did you no. like? I can't. There are
no. there are there are a few things you don't kind of come to your mind to do, like, you know, biting or pulling hair or spitting on someone or. I've probably done the old cup check, like lift, but the Zorro spear from miles away, clear as day, that was something to see. And the reaction to Tampa was awesome. Like, full five guys on Tony D'Angelo. The Philly players are like, we don't even know what to do here. Like, do we defend him? Like, that was egregious. Yeah. I don't know how hurt Corey Perifoli is. Okay. I mean, it is dangerous, but it's more against the sort of code of ethics more than it is a violently dangerous play. I think he's going to get suspended. That was crazy how clear that was, pretty, Pierre. Wild.
The camera shot on it, too.
That was no good. I once had a – I once lost a line drive in the lights in a softball game about 23 years ago. The ball never hit the grass. I was in left field, lost it in the lights. So I put the glove on top of my face so that I didn't get the ball.
Please tell me this face. Video. Please tell
Unfortunately,
me
the ball hit me right in the private area. And I will tell you that was damaging. That was very painful.
Did your hat fall off when you fell to the ground? Because I'm trying to put the
video together. No, but it was co-ed softball, and I could hear my wife laughing from the third base position. She was laughing her head off, not knowing that I was really in a lot of pain.
Oh, that's my tremendous. Goodness. That's really something. You know,
I'm sharing personal stories
that's
here.
That's good.
We appreciate you opening up here on the podcast. That's what Got Your Back is all about, being vulnerable and sharing great stories, Pierre. That was a good one. Well, how about Tony D'Angelo? So he commits the crime, but then he's got to do the time, and that was being paraded out in front of the media to answer for it last night. Here was the explanation, guys.
He tried to slash my stick out of my hands a second beforehand. He talks all game, you know, so... Asked him to fight, doesn't want to fight. He'll tell you that he's asked me to fight for years. I don't say no. So there's not much of an argument there. But I didn't look to, you know, I wasn't trying to give him a shot. Replay probably looks a little bit worse than it was meant to be, but it is what it is. I took 30 punches on the ground. And when I get up, they don't let me do what I got to do. So it's whatever.
It's whatever. Had to be an uncomfortable interview to do, Johnny, with the media. No, saying, so about that one.
You know what? At least he owned it. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't try to tap dance around saying, I thought he was going to, like, always slash my stick and it slipped into his groin. I'm like, hang on. So he's like, listen, it was an ongoing feud and I wanted to take it to a fight. He didn't want to. Like, now, and if you're Corey Perry, like, you basically are fighting next game. Like, you kind of have to.
You pretty much have to.
I don't know if they play again this year or not, but, and he's kind of resigned to his fate. I think Tony seemed to be pretty sure of himself, and he's okay being the bad guy, or if he gets suspended, I don't think it seems like it's going to bother him. He wasn't trying to angle for sympathy. He's like, yeah, it happened because he didn't want to fight me. So he's the violator of the code more than I am.
He violated something.
That was a ballsy interview.
By the way, Johnny, you got to clarify. Okay, so you said you never speared anybody, but maybe you went to flip the cup up. Like, what are we?
No,
how do cup, you like, gently flip no, the cup like, up?
You know, and is maybe that you're
with
your battling
stick or with your hand or like how are you?
Not with
doing
my
that?
Hand, but like you know, sometimes like your stick goes up between a guy's legs opposed to poking him in that area. Like you're battling, it's like like TJ Oshie gets cup checked every warm up by one of his teammates. If you ever see the highlights. Like okay. That kind of thing, like you, where you lift them off the ground as opposed to, you know,
okay.
Spear them through the center.
Right. Got it.
Is the cup check that I was referring
cup
to.
Cup check. Okay. Yes. I just had this visual of you lifting the cup. No. Like
I wasn't checking a cup.
Your...
It's just the move is called a cup check. Like this old GM of the Lakers, Mick, cup check.
Exactly. All right. Good stuff today, guys. Much appreciated. We'll chat again real soon. Johnny, thanks. I know you got a flight to catch, my friend.
All right, boys. Talk soon.
Still plenty more to come here on Got Your Back after the break. Hurricanes President, General Manager, Alternate Governor Don Waddell is coming up. Stay with us. We want to tell you about a truly Canadian company. Cross Country Canada Supplies and Rentals provides equipment and supplies to all facets of the Canadian construction industry. But what sets them apart is their get-her-done attitude. It's a core value of their company. I've been to the offices. I've seen how they proudly display that on the wall at each branch. Every one of the staff members lives by the get-her-done formula to ensure they'll never let their customers down. They'll bend over backwards to get their clientele what they need when they need it. They don't make excuses. Cross Country Canada takes great pride in this attitude, and they truly believe that the success of their customer is their success. You can't get much more Canadian than that. All right, time now for Who's Got Your Back, brought to you by Liberty Smart Security, a company that specializes in having your back. High-quality, advanced smart security systems for your home or your business. Liberty Smart Security uses leading-edge technology to protect the things you value most in your life. Your home is your castle. Protect it with Liberty Smart Security. Visit libertysecurity.ca. Today on the program, Pierre had a chance to catch up with Don Waddell. So many teams out east were just going ham at the deadline, making all kinds of deals, draft picks out, high impact players in. And we know that Waddell tried, but at the end of the day, Pierre, just a couple of trades. Yet I get the feeling in our conversation with him, man, is he confident about the group that he has assembled? And he doesn't seem stressed out about it at all, the fact that they didn't land the big, big fish.
No, I think they're pretty good. I mean, listen, once he didn't get Timo Meier, which is a guy that they really wanted, not just for this year, but for a long-term play, I think they were going to be careful with some of the things that they tried. And they tried. This team reminds me a bit, and we'll see what happens. The East is crazy. But in 2018, Ryan, the Washington Capitals did next to nothing at the trade deadline. They had been going for it for years and spending assets, and they kind of were quiet that year. And that's the year they won the cup. And I remember thinking, it just goes to show you that.
Well, how many times have we seen? Yeah, how many times have we seen teams really load up and then hoist a Stanley Cup? Like, does that happen ever? Often?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I love that Colorado added the three players they did last year. Luckinen was an absolute stud in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just have the sense that the Hurricanes are pretty comfortable in their own skin. I know who they are. They're playing great. They have an amazing chemistry. Whether or not that finally means getting to a cup final, we'll see. But of all the teams where, you know, had the Leafs done nothing, that would have been a story for me, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, had the Rangers not added offense, I think Carolina is a team that says, okay, we added a couple of pieces and we're okay with it.
All right. And for Oiler fans, yes, we did ask him about the acquisition of Jesse Puljujarvi. So for Liberty Smart Security, who's got your back? We present Hurricanes General Manager, President Don Waddell. From his very busy and used-looking office, Don Waddell joins us, John. I always try and picture where general managers are, what their space looks like, kind of how they organize themselves. How are you as far as a guy in an office? Are you an organized feller, or are you, is it always a disaster right after trade deadline?
Well, I try to be organized most of the time. That's why I'm an early morning person. I usually try to get in real early to get things going for the day and clean up the mess from the day before. And some days it works, some days it doesn't. So right now, after the trade deadline, I got a million things going on. I ignored for a week on the business side. So we got a lot going on here and trying to obviously keep our hockey club going forward.
Don, your team is three, as we tape this on Wednesday morning, your team is 3-0 since the trade deadline. And Shane Gostisbehere, one of your acquisitions, has a couple goals already, seems to fit in well. I got two questions here. One is, when do you expect Puljujärvi to play his first game with you guys?
Well, he just got his visa yesterday, so he joined our team in Montreal, which was a good thing. And so he hasn't skated with our team. We're off today because of the travel back from Montreal last night. So he'll pregame skate tomorrow, and potentially we may see him tomorrow night, or it might be on Saturday, but you'll see him definitely before the weekend.
Right. And like I said, the team 3-0 since the trade deadline. You were the team that sort of got picked on by a lot of observers after the trade deadline for no other reason than every other team that's right there in the elite group of six, as I call them in the East, took huge swings, traded first round picks, added some big names. It certainly wasn't from a lack of trying in terms of the bigger names for you, Don. From a lot of our reporting, we know that, I know you can't name him, so I'll name him. You were in hard on Timo Meier, who ended up with New Jersey. You looked at a lot of different things. Maybe just talk about the fact that, hey, you know, sometimes it's not meant to be at the deadline, and how you feel about your team, even with all these other teams around you adding some big names.
Yeah, and I've said it multiple times that, you know, what other teams do, everybody's got different plans and different outlooks of where they're at with their hockey club at this time. And, you know, see, I don't ever worry about what everybody else is doing. I worry about what we need to do. And as you mentioned, we took a swing at one of the bigger players, and, you know, we weren't going to give up a young player off our roster. We went into the trade deadline, and, you know, a lot of times you get caught up in the moment and say, well, you know, let's go ahead and do it. But, you know, we had a plan in place, and that's just not something that we felt that was in the best interest, not only short term, but long term for our franchise. So, you know, Roddy does a great job with our players here. You know, he's not a guy in the system we play that wants to make a lot of changes at the deadline. You know, we talk about it. Our deadline's in the summertime. You know, that's when you really need to build your team, in our opinion, and, you know, maybe tweak it at the trade deadline. But, you know, it's different philosophies for different organizations. I don't, you know, what other people did, you know, they've had a reason to do it, and so be it. But from our organization standpoint, it's just not the way that we were going to do things.
Gostisbehere comes in, and, you know, it's interesting. Nick Bjugstad came in here to Edmonton. He's been really good for the Oilers in the couple of games that he's played. Gostisbehere has obviously been very good for you guys as well. I wonder, when you're evaluating a player and consider bringing him in, and he's on a team that's in the bottom tier of the league, and they're playing games in a different way, different lineup, a little less meaningful than the teams that are in the playoffs. When you're evaluating those players and thinking, how would they be in our system? How would they be playing, you know, in the middle of a playoff chase? What was your evaluation of what you were seeing out of Gostisbehere there, and the thought process on what you might be able to get out of him, throwing him into a competitive environment in a playoff chase?
Yeah, well, if you back up about probably 2 months ago, you know, our power play's been 23rd in the league, might have moved up a spot or so the last couple of games, but and of the 16 playoff teams a while back, we were number 16. So, you know, first we went in and identified what our needs were. And we really said, you know, we need to add another power play defenseman. You know, somebody that can run one of the units. Obviously, Brent Burns does a great job on one unit, but we need somebody to run the other unit. And then we wanted to add a little size and speed on forward if we didn't get one of the big fish. And so, you know, with Gostisbehere, you know, we talked to Bill Armstrong probably 2 months ago, and then the Ghost got hurt there for a while, so we were waiting for him to get back. So we had done our homework. We were very familiar with this player. We had, everybody had watched him. You know, we knew the situation that they're in, that they were going to move him eventually. And so, you know, we probably had that in our mind months ago, acted on it, obviously, the week of the deadline. But so it wasn't so much initially each player was what's our needs, and then once we determine what our needs were, what players fill that bill. And obviously he was one that we identified early on, and we end up landing him.
You mentioned Burns and the fact that, you know, your bigger moves have traditionally come in the summer in Carolina. You know, you acquired him actually on the first day of free agency, interestingly, a trade with San Jose. But one of the underappreciated parts of that trade was that Burns had to waive to go to Carolina. He had a pretty tight list of just a couple of teams as part of his modified no trade, and you weren't originally on it. And in that situation, you need a quick answer, and he has to make a quick decision. What was your thought process as you're wondering if you can get a guy like Brent Burns?
Yeah, when I heard he was on the market, obviously Mike Greer had just taken over as general manager in San Jose, so I called Mike and I said, can I touch base with his agent just to see if they have any interest in coming to Carolina? And I had a long history with Ron Salser, Brent's agent from California, because I can remember, I don't remember particularly what day it was. It was sometime the weekend of the draft when I called Ron and said, you know, I know Brent's got a list of teams and we're not on it. You know, would you ever talk to him and see if he'd consider coming to Carolina? And I think I've said, I can't remember if it was 15 minutes or 20 minutes, I got the call back from Ron saying he would love to come to Carolina. So that showed me right away that we were a destination that he would love to come to. And we started working with Mike in San Jose to put the deal together. And, you know, it's you always, you know, if you go back a few years, it's probably not a phone call that Brent would have been excited about. But I can tell you from the first day he got here, from the first moment I talked to him driving in his RV, that he was excited about joining our team. And I think we traded for him on Wednesday or Tuesday night, I can't remember. And by Friday, he was in here, bought a house, went back to Texas, loaded up his family in his RV, and headed to Raleigh and lived in his RV with his family for a month till his house got done. So he was excited to come here, and we were more excited of having him.
What do you like best about your team, Don?
Oh, the way we play. We're a pressure team. You know, we play with pressure. We can all skate. I mean, skating is a big part of the game today. And if you're going to play this style, you have to trust your other players on the ice, because playing a man-on-man system, you know, if one guy messes up, it can throw the whole wrench into the whole unit of five. So you got to trust your teammate and be able to skate the system we play. But, you know, we don't sit back, and, you know, it doesn't matter if we're up by a goal or down by a goal. We don't change our style a whole lot. You know, Roddy really believes in puck pressure, and the more pressure you can put on, hopefully you can create more turnovers. And, you know, if you do the analytics, we have the puck a lot. And that's, I think, to win hockey games, you need the puck. So I think the way we're going about it is working for us.
You know, second best record in the NHL, you'd think you could put your feet up soon and start resting guys. But the Devils are right on your heels. And listen, there are no easy playoff matchups in today's game. We all know that. But the importance, though, of the very least in the East, the way the top of the East is looking, avoiding the 2-3 matchup in both divisions, I mean, how important is it for you to try and stay where you are, Don?
Well, again, you know, we go out every night and we're trying to win every hockey game. And, you know, we want to finish first if we possibly can, because for multiple reasons, you know, you secure home ice through the first two rounds, at least the first two rounds of the our division finals, and then you jump over and play the other winner out of the other division. So I think home ice, we've been a pretty good team on the road always, but I think having home ice, not only for our team but for our fans, I think it's important that we continue the energy we have in our building and the support that we're getting. So, you know, we, like you said, Pierre, you can't pick your opponent. It does never work, and whoever we play, but, you know, we're going to try to go as hard as we can to the end of the year to put ourselves in the best spot to keep home ice.
You mentioned expecting Puljujärvi to be available here shortly. How long had you been paying attention to the Jesse Puljujärvi situation in Edmonton? You know, how far back does your kind of interest in that player go? And how much did you know about his persona here in Edmonton? I live and work here. I cover this team, the Bison King, kind of larger than life with his fan base, rabid fan base that he had here. Real interesting personality, but it never really quite worked here for whatever reason. Don, what was your evaluation of what happened here and how long were you eyeing this player?
Yeah, you know, over the last year, for sure, you know, it started last summer when I was talking to Kenny, and, you know, Kenny, again, always said, I'm not going to trade this player unless I get forced to. You know, they liked the player. They still thought there was an upside there, and they, you know, they knew when they drafted him years ago that he had potential to be a real good player. So very familiar with how popular he was in Edmonton. But, you know, at the end of the day, Kenny was put in a situation where he wanted to get a defenseman. And when he called me that morning, because he knew I'd expressed interest for a long time, because he had to move some salary cap and we were able to take it, that of the phone calls I get, that was one of the better ones I got, because I knew we wanted this player, try to put him in our lineup and take him to the next level.
All right. Switch gears here. Do you have any Atlanta Thrashers stuff in your office there, Don?
Yeah, I do, actually. I have a few things from, you know, I'm careful about not living in the past too much, right, or the nightmare. I do. There's some proud things that we accomplished there. You know, it was a challenge. Obviously, we all know the stories with our ownership and all that. But there are a lot of good people. I still have a lot of good friends in the Atlanta area.
Well,
my daughter, my grandkids, they still live in the Atlanta area. So, yeah, no, there's some good memories that I remember. It was my first opportunity to be a general manager and get that chance. So you never forget those kind of days.
Well, and you know why I'm bringing this up. Interesting little hinty tweet from John Buchagross, I think on deadline day, which is why I missed it at first. But hinting at Atlanta's renewed interest in an NHL team, I made a few calls. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's legit that Atlanta has reached out, but I think it's also, the fact is, the NHL has heard from a lot of different places and right now doesn't seem inclined to open up another expansion process for now. So I guess my question to you would be, what do you think from all the years you were there that would need to look like to get back in, you know, to get back in a position where the league takes you more seriously, maybe?
Right. Well, the first thing, you'd have to get a new building. The building that we played in back then has been retrofitted for basketball and would not be up to NHL standards to come back there. So you'd have to get a new building. I do think if you were building a new building, you'd probably look to build it out of the city. Most of the season ticket holders and fans came from north of the city, and you know, traffic's always a little bit of an issue there. So you know, I think, you know, hockey has really grown. I mean, even the last 15 years, you think about the popularity of hockey, and whether it's Atlanta or some of these other markets, I think the NHL right now is fan base is just growing. And, you know, you got some of these cities that I've mentioned are major metropolitan cities throughout the country that, you know, I think all could probably support an NHL team. So, I don't know what the plans are for expansion. Obviously, that's a commissioner's call, and, you know, we have 32 teams now, and I'm sure there's some cities that probably have a lot of interest in trying to join the NHL. But to answer your question, I think if with the new building, you know, I can't see why it would not at least have a reasonable chance for success if the NHL decides to go in that direction.
Well, Don, the name of the podcast is Got Your Back. We love hearing those stories that people have about that time in their life, their career, where somebody came through for them and had their back. So when we throw that proposition to Don Waddell, who had your back, Don?
Well, a lot of people probably had my back if I needed it as a young manager. But the one person that always stuck out and had a great relationship and still talk to is Jimmy Devolano. When I got the job in San Diego in 1990 as a young GM, Jimmy was running the Red Wings, obviously, at that time. And not only did he become a good friend of mine, but he was a big resource for me, helped me make some really tough decisions with not only players but coaching, helped me out. I had sent Mike O'Connell to be my first coach in San Diego. But, you know, Jimmy's one of those guys that he's a late night guy, so it was great on the West Coast because my phone would ring at 11 o'clock at night. It'd be 2 o'clock in the East, and I knew who was calling me, and we'd have those late chats that I remember him very well. And he was not only a friend, like I said, but a big resource and a big influence on my career and really helped me get my career started. And eventually ended up winning a Stanley Cup with him and Kenny Holland and Scotty Bowman in Detroit, 97-98. So I owe a lot to not only Jimmy, but Kenny also. So that would be the person that I would mention.
The old IHL. For those who are watching our podcast under the age of 30,
yeah.
Pretty good hockey in that league, boy.
Well, listen, Don, really appreciate your time. Best of luck the rest of the way. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch what happens out there in the East, and you guys are going to be right in the thick of it. It's going to be very interesting. Appreciate your time and good luck.
Always enjoy being with you guys and really appreciate giving me the opportunity to talk about Carolina Hurricanes hockey.
All right. Thanks, Don. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to wrap up the podcast. Big thanks to Don Waddell for his time. Mike Johnson, Pierre Lebrun, great job as always. And, of course, huge thanks to our sponsors, Cross Country Canada Supplies and Rentals, Kuma Outdoor Gear, and our good friends over at Liberty Smart Security. Thank you for your downloads and your subscriptions, folks. We really appreciate you helping us out. If you get a chance, go over to iTunes and leave us a review. Good, bad, let us know what you think of the podcast so far. We're having a ton of fun doing it. Look forward to doing more. Talk to you soon.